Welcome, my friend. You are listening to Read Clean YA with CJ, the podcast for teens and young adults who want to explore exciting worlds, deep themes, and epic stories without the objectionable content. I'm your host, award-winning young adult author, CJ Malacy, and in this episode, we are going to dive into an author interview with best-selling author S.D. Smith. Though packed with old-school virtue and moral imagination, S.D. Smith doesn't merely create safe stories, but bold, daring, truthful tales of light that help shape children who become dangerous, dangerous to the darkness. Smith is a founder and owner of Story Warren, a publishing events and IP development house based in rural West Virginia. Story Warren exists to serve families as allies in imagination. S.D. Smith lives in Grandview, West Virginia, with his wife and four kids. Sam, welcome to the show.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you, CJ. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm thrilled to have you back. For our listeners who don't know, Sam was on a little bit ago and we talked about his Jack Zulu series, which he co-wrote with his son. And we had a great conversation. So if you haven't heard that, I'll link to it in the show notes. I encourage you to check it out. But today I'm very excited because we're talking about Sam's newest book, which has been a bit of a secret that he's finally unveiled at the end of April. And it is the newest book in your beloved Green Ember series, right?
It is. Yeah. Thank you for having me back. I loved our last conversation. I really enjoyed. I have this dread that I'm going to, we can't reach those Olympian heights that we, I feel like we had a great conversation. It was so fun.
It was.
So maybe I need to be optimistic. Let's do it again.
You know, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. New book in the Green Ember series. It'll be the 12th book in the Green Ember series, but it's kind of a introduction. It's a bit of a front door in a unique way. So I'm excited about it.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. So that is a lot of fun since it's kind of another way for readers to enter the Green Ember universe. And this story has something a little extra special about it as well. So if you don't mind, could you share with our listeners a little bit about the story and this unique addition you've added for this entrance into the series?
I like how you're tiptoeing around.
You got to give this fun announcement. I can't give this announcement.
It is exciting in a couple of ways. There are four sort of big Green Ember books, the core of the series, and then there's a back series which is called the Old Natalia trilogy, Green Ember Old Natalia, and then there's a series featuring an archer, Green Ember Archer. There's a trilogy there, and then there's a new trilogy that we're working on called Lost Tales. But this is the first time we're going to come out with another big book, and it's called Green Ember Helmer in the Dragon Tomb. And it's this beloved character from the main series who people just love him. He's a crusty old mentor warrior kind of a guy. He's rude sometimes and brooding and mean. And for some reason, kids are like, that's the character I love. He is kind of funny, and he does become more tenderhearted, and he's loving. And honestly, he's the most popular character in the series. So for years, people have been asking, oh, you got to do a Helmer story. So we're doing a Helmer story, and he is it's his origin story, where he's sort of back in the place where his mentee, his apprentice Pickett was, and that is he's a farmer, and which Pickett wasn't a farmer, but he is a farmer who must become a fighter. It's and it's his origin story. So that's, I think, the first level of kind of it being cool the audience has really been anticipating this. And I loved writing this story. So I wrote a novel, Helmer in the Dragon Tomb. And for people who love the series and love the original four books, they're going to totally love this Helmer adventure. But you don't have to have read those. You can come straight in this way. And the thing we're tiptoeing around is the exciting news that this novel is, we're going to release it at the same time as its video gamization. So right now we're running a Kickstarter that is sharing sort of both this book and its video gamization. So the Green Ember has always been an immersive world. Kids have always played in this world. They've drawn pictures, gone outside and played with sticks and, you know, fought, and they've made up their own stories and sort of co-opted their stuffed animals and made up adventures and done it with Legos. And I've gotten every kind of thing you can imagine from art and storytelling. People have made plays about it, made their own little movies. And so it's just been incredible. So kids have always immersed themselves in this world. And we've got this new, a cool, exciting way to do that with this new, book. And that is, it is a video game. You can read the book and you can play the book, and they're coming out at the same time. And we are so, so thrilled to share this new exciting way that the Green Ember is growing, and it's growing off the page.
It's so exciting. And I love that it's coming to life in this way. But one of my favorite parts about this is that it's your readers who brought the book to life outside of the pages of the story first. And if you're not on Sam's newsletter, you should be, because I love how you feature the art and the different ways kids have created their, even like you said, Legos or clay versions of the rabbits. And it's a story that calls to something deep within them that makes them want to actually become these characters. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why this video game is so exciting, because it's something the kids are actually already doing. They want ways to experience these books as more than just a book. So I think it's exciting that you're offering them this opportunity through a video game, especially because there's a lot of video games out there that aren't so great. So to have a great video game with a great story, a great message behind it is a beautiful thing, in my opinion. And stories come in all different forms. And I think video game is a form of story that we don't talk about as often, but it's a very big element. So I'm curious, what kind of push toward the video game as the way to like do the next part of your story?
At some point I started thinking about, wouldn't it be cool to not just do an adaptation, but wouldn't it be cool to do sort of a new adventure that was fresh, that wasn't, you're just sort of playing, you know, that happens with, you know, a movie will come out and be popular and they'll make a video game version of it, and sometimes with books, but to do it at the same time, that felt unique. And I was excited by that, the possibility of like, how would that be like to sort of do something fresh and to do something, not just do an adaptation, but do a really like a, always kind of thought in these sort of not just multimedia, but transmedia terms, that this would be something that could be shared in a lot of different ways, that there's TV shows, there's audio dramas, there's board games, there's video games. I've always thought about the Green Ember as this world that was very adaptable, partly because of what you're talking about, that that's my nature anyway, is I make up games and I make up different things. I always did that as a kid. And I think that the audience, like you're saying, is super creative. And I think they like these different things. So I think the Green Ember is really adaptable and at home in different kinds of storytelling. So I don't know where the original idea came from, but I like that it was a cool constraint too, just thinking about writing a novel alongside of writing a video game, that it was going to be at the same thing. That was a cool challenge. And I don't know, you probably can relate to this as well. Sometimes, you know, we want endless open possibilities, but really constraints are really a gift. And if we don't have them, I think we need to introduce them as sort of artists, it's valuable to have a constraint. And most of us just have them because of our limited time or limited capacity, or limited finances, whatever. There's a lot of, so it's kind of cool to operate within new constraints that are different. Right. And I enjoyed that as a creative challenge. I am enjoying that as a creative challenge, and it's hard, but I like that. It's kind of wakes you up to a new way. And I thought that it might interfere with sort of the way that I like to tell a novel, the way I like to write a book, but I love this book. Yeah. I love the book by itself. So people who just love books, they're
going to love it.
The Green Ember story, they're going to enjoy this. I think it was really fun. It did not damage. Part of me maybe thought, I'll have to subtract a little bit from the book in order for the game to make sense and the game to work, them to work together. But I don't find that's true at all. I find that it was a really cool restraint to work within. And I don't know what else I would have done if it was just the video game. I would be very pleased to just release this book. So it's cool. It's cool to do it all together. It's really fun.
It is. And it's a unique experience. Like you said, I think usually one follows the other. And so to have them come together is a lot of fun, because families can read this book together and play the game together, and it can be something that is all encompassing, which is unique as well. I love what you said about constraints. I agree with you. I think that those boundaries in life are so much more important than we realize, and it is often within boundaries that we discover more freedom. And it goes against our human understanding and reasoning, but it is how God designed us, to work and live within certain guidelines and boundaries. And it's in those places that we can explore in a way we never could have otherwise, which sounds counterintuitive. But I love that you saw that play out in even writing this book while working on a video game, and it ended up making it a story that you were like, oh, this made it even better. It was fun to play in this space. And that is something that I think is really important to remember as creative people, but also just as those who are following after God. Yeah. We need to remember that he puts us in boundaries, not to limit us, but so that we can find that narrow way that leads to the broad places he talks about in his word, that they're so much bigger than we realize because we're narrow-minded. He is not, you know?
Yes, I totally agree with you. I think that's such a neglected subject. And it's really, where is the place it's not neglected? It's in storytelling. Because how many stories do we have about people exceeding their limits and thinking they're going to find freedom, but they find pain, death? Because we have known, you know, even think about just myths or fables. There's so many of them that are, you know, the Icarus, you know, flying too close to the sun. There's just so much that we think that the removal of restraints will liberate us entirely. And it's only just what kind of restraints that we, because limitless restraints are not good for human beings. They're not good for kids. I know as a parent, that was just, it's such a gift to draw the line and to say, you know, here that there's something, I think even just mental health wise for kids, that's so refreshing when someone says, you have a bedtime, you need to brush your teeth. And it feels, you know, as a kid, you feel like, but you know, adults know, no, that's a huge gift. And it's people who, you know, who doesn't get told when to go to bed or what to brush their teeth, or that they can't watch 15,000 hours of TV and eat candy bars all day. Like people who don't have someone who loves them.
Yeah.
And when someone loves you, that you have boundaries. And I'm totally with you. I think that's so true. And I think it's so valuable. And it's interesting that Christians have done that for a long time too. Like there's obviously legalism, and there's kind of like requiring of everybody around you that everybody follows your crazy extra rules or whatever. And that's destructive in a lot of ways. But for a lot of Christians, they've decided to either get together with other people and be accountable for and have certain limitations, or to have kind of like a rule of life. Like this is how I am going to have to live in order to follow Jesus. Some people had to be, you know, like for periods, like go be secluded together with other Christians to kind of like, let's get straight here. And it can be a gift. Yeah. The whole, sort of, you cannot say yes without saying no.
Yes.
And I think that's so cool that you're hitting on that. It's really real.
Yeah. Well, I would love if you wouldn't mind kind of talking a little bit about, why do you think it's so important for stories to capture readers, especially young readers, kids and teens, so much that they actually want to be those characters, you know, that they want to go outside and play like they are these characters in the story? Why do stories do that? And why is it important that they touch a heart in that way?
Well, I think you and I are in, I think stories are meaning making machines. And I think we long to have significance. I think it's sort of weird because I think we do want to see ourselves in a relative relationship with others and with God, especially when we're young. We're trying to figure out all those places. Where am I in relationship to others? And sometimes that results in envy or different kinds of strife, that sort of thing. But it's all kind of like the playbill, the beginning of a play. You'll see like, here are the characters and, you know, where they are. And it's kind of like, you know, Ecclesiastes, God is in heaven, you are on earth, let your words be few. We're always trying to figure out our orientation, our relative location to other people. We're trying to figure out our significance. And I think stories, you know, C.S. Lewis said that the intellect is the organ of truth and that the imagination is the organ of meaning. And I think that we are longing to not just be informed. I think the truth is so important. It matters so much. But it's not just about having correct information. It's about, I think, stories and imagination invites us into what we love and like who we are. And it shapes our perception of meaning. And I think what I would say is not just like we don't create reality by our perceptions, but we sort of can come more and fully into contact with the reality of the world God made through these meaning-making machines. And I think we're stumbling around. It's kind of funny that I genuinely think that kids and all of us, that we actually find, we often find the deepest meaning in fictional or imaginative adventures, because it touches our hearts in a way. It's not just our mental ascent, but we're figuring out not just it is true, you shouldn't hit a woman, you know, for a man should hear that, like, that's a good rule. But that's different than seeing a man defend a woman in a story where your heart, you know, people are really, in the modern world, are really down on, you know, save the princess kind of stories. But I think there's a reason why, like, that St. George legend and others have resonated with people. I think for men, I can just say, like, we need to see that kind of thing. I want my son to see a woman carrying something heavy or something and saying, can I help you with that? Can I open a door for you? And that's all terribly, horribly old fashioned and very looked down upon. But I think there's something about that our hearts go out to. And I think, and we need different things. I think men and women are different and that we need different things, but there's obviously all kinds of overlap. But I just think about stories as these deep meaning making machines. And that's why it's just all throughout the Bible. It's not just, I'm telling you, you better do this. Even it's at Sinai, which has been in my Bible reading recently through the daily office. You know, we've been going through Genesis and Exodus, and it's been awesome to just even reading about, you've got these commands, you've got the laws, the famous 10 commandments, but what do you have all around it? What's God given us? Stories everywhere about the reaction, about doing this, about doing that. It's just so much narrative and poetry and songs. It's just, so for the artistic sort of, the value of the arts, even if you think about the building of the tabernacle, you have Oholiab and Bezalel, who are literally, like, they are artists and they are given instructions. And it's the first place in the Bible where someone has the spirit of the Lord is Bezalel. And he's an artist. He's a craftsman and he's multi-talented and he's making beautiful things. He's not writing information. He's not writing technical information. He's not saying, and furthermore, here's another bit of instructions or whatever. It's just, he's making beauty. You know, he makes the high priest robe for beauty and for glory. So I just think there's a value in narrative that gets at our hearts and makes us not just know that we should do something, but want to. That's the biggest result of reading The Lord of the Rings for me, maybe it's delight. But it's also, it's so inspiring because it makes me want to be a good man. It makes me want to follow really good, aka perfect man. You know, that makes me want to long for the kingdom. Imagine, I mean, Aragorn's this tiny shard of what Christ would be like. And it's not an allegory. He's not trying to beat you up with information, right? But it's this invitation to sort of experience deep, deep meaning. So CJ, I have rambled like a lunatic here, but I hope we come around to some kind of meaning about why kids take stories, you know, home with them so much, and why it matters what kind of stories they take home.
And I think along with that, they have this thing that touches their heart. So the Green Ember series, for example, these kids read these books about these rabbits with swords, which is cool to begin with, right? That's a fun premise. And so they get into the story and it touches something deep within them. And I think the reason they then would take it to play, why that story is important enough to touch their heart in that way, and then they go play, and it's because they want to become that. They want to be what they've been inspired by. Yeah. And I think there's so much power in a story that can capture a young reader's mind in that way. Because like you said, our intellect may tell us, yes, you know, be good, fight bad things, like, you know, don't succumb to evil, overcome evil with good. All of these things we might know logically or intellectually, but when something touches our heart, when it pierces our heart, which I love stories because they can do this, they hit the emotion more than the intellect, right? They kind of come through the back door sometimes, and the things somebody's heard over and over again, which never really resonated, but they could repeat to you verbatim, you know, kids, they know they should take out the trash, but they don't do it, you know, or something like that. They know what they should do, that they might not do it, but a story can touch our hearts. It can resonate in our lives. And I think when a story can capture a reader's heart, especially a young reader's heart, so much that they want to create something to show what their imagination is seeing, whether it's through drawing a picture or go outside and pretend to be those characters or pick up a video game and play it. It's because they want to now become what they're inspired by. And I think that there's a power there that is untapped sometimes, because we can be so consumed with wanting to make the story that we forget about the reader. And I think one of the things I love about you is that your premise for what you do is all about making kids dangerous to the darkness, being partners with parents in imagination. You want to come alongside of parents and kids to point them back to God ultimately, to teach them biblical values and godly principles. And I think these stories are so powerful because kids are being inspired. And I love that. And I love that you're now giving them another tool to like reinforce the thing that's like growing in their heart of being like, I want to be this. I want to be that courageous. I want to be the one who faces the crazy enemy that I shouldn't be able to defeat, because I believe that I'm doing what's right. And that's what matters more than doing what's easy. And that's so powerful in a world where we are bombarded by things that say, live an easy life, do what's best for you, and kind of forget the godly principles that our nation was once built upon, you know?
Yeah, I find, we've probably talked about this before, but I don't necessarily try to think like I'm going to insert this principle or something, but they just come in. Tolkien talked about stories bubbling up from the leaf mold of the mind, that there's all these things that fall in the forest, you know, and it just sort of grows and you don't always know where it's coming from. But this book in particular, it's pretty explicitly, I don't know if it's come from sort of maybe some of my frustration with some of the, there's all kinds of ways of going wrong. There's sort of like going in one ditch and then you can kind of overcorrect over to the other ditch. And there's so many, I think a lot of this book, I'm just thinking about this on the spot here, but it's a lot about like my concerns about who is telling young boys like what it means to be a man. And there are definitely two ditches there. You know, there's a reaction, I think, to sort of what maybe the dogma of the last, you know, several decades has been, that's almost like brings about a sort of a harshness and an ugliness and a dominating kind of attitude which I find very ugly, that Christ is this strong, but loving and cares and has a heart and has a servant's heart and wants to give and wants to and is so I just think there is so much in this story about the sort of, I think, happened in the Jack Zulu books for sure, but I think that what happens in a lot of my stories, and probably maybe this is all stories, but just like you sort of get this vision about what it means to be, to follow the path of the way of life or the way of death. And I think that's really clear in this story. And in a way that's, I think it's, I don't know, it's pretty stark. And I hope that what happens is what you are describing, which is the kids take it home and it goes inside their hearts and they feel encouraged and inspired to be, well, strong, but gentle men. I think about for boys, I have a big heart for boys, and I don't know why lately, maybe because I feel like a lot of times boys have been overlooked a lot, and boys are sometimes the reluctant readers and pretty far behind girls in readers. So I think sometimes in reading, so sometimes maybe about this project, I think about video games as being maybe a gateway into stories. I hope that happens for a lot of boys. And so I don't know, maybe I had a special heart, and I just feels like with girls are so, the girls in my audience are so brilliant, and they've identified so much with so many of the female characters and all, you know, the characters that I have shared over the years, like Heather is probably and also a massively favorite character. But it feels, my feeling is that girls adapt well to any kind of story better than boys do, that the boys are more persnickety, or maybe it's just because their boys are less skilled as readers, I think, in general. And girls are, have a superior sort of aptitude broadly, I think, with book reading. So anyway, I've got a bit of a heart for boys. I see a lot of them struggling, and I hope this is a good gift for them.
No, I think that's so important, especially because, like you said, there's the two ditches, and in an effort to say that girls can be strong and do all these things, I think we've gone into another ditch where we've forgotten that boys need to be told that as well. And that God made boys to be protectors and defenders. And we've lost sight of training them in that way because there's been so much like, oh, the girl boss or, you know, the strong female lead or whatever. And we've forgotten that boys need examples of that as well. And I think it's important for them to know that we need godly men. We really do need godly men around. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find sometimes. And it's an important thing to equip these young boys, especially to know that they have a purpose and that they're seen and that they're boys and they're different than girls. And that's okay. And it's good. It's actually how God intended it to be.
Yeah. They have gifts to give. I have a concern for like some of the people who are saying like, who maybe have had a belly full of the girl boss and just a long time of movies and shows where a guy is sort of standing by waiting to be rescued. And there's a kind of a fighting, you know, the girl who's just, you know, omnicompetent. And there's just a lot of like those kinds of stories. And I think what's happened sometimes is people are reacting now to that with this sort of an ugly form of masculinity that's kind of brutal, and some of the people that young men look up to are not good men. They mistreat women, and I'm frustrated and shocked by some of the people that I would think would have better sense are indulging in sort of behavior of idolizing or looking up to or just indulging at all. People who are men who are doing horrible things, horrible, you know, examples. And I just that makes me so sad. I hate that. So there's got to be, I want my boys to grow up, I hope, with a Christ-like vision of what masculinity looks like. And I hope that these books represent that in a generous way.
Yes, I love what you're doing. And shockingly, but not shockingly, we are almost out of time here. I always lose track of time when I'm talking to you because I get so into the conversation. But you are launching these books, you mentioned it earlier, a little bit differently, or this book and video game differently, because you're going through Kickstarter. So could you share with our listeners a little bit about how they can get a copy of your new book and the video game and why you're using Kickstarter?
Sure. I'm so excited. We are doing a Kickstarter right now, and it's for the video game and the book, and they're tied together. And that's intentional because I want them to go together. We're also sharing a Time Steward Adventure Journal, which is a tool for kids and for families to use together to sort of think about time and to make decisions intentionally about, I'm going to spend, you know, because what the last thing we want is for a kid to just only play video games. And this video game's been designed. It has a beginning, a middle, and end. It doesn't have level up ads throughout. You know, you're not trying to, it's not a monetization scheme. You pay for it once and you've got it. So in that sense, it's a challenge marketing, you know, in the market wise, because it's just, that's not how video games make money or become solvent, you know, these days. So we've made a lot of choices that I think are radically hospitable to the kids and the families that are not good business. Because a lot of the games are just predatory, and they're designed to, and they just market them so heavily, and they're playing this long game of algorithm and trying to figure out how to basically extract a bunch of money and attention. Yeah. So we're not trying to do that. You go into this like a book and you can come out of it. You can go back and play again, just like you can go back and read a book, but it has a beginning, a middle, and end. It's a moral universe, no weird ads, no chat features connecting you to kind of strangers, which I know can sometimes be good, but this doesn't have any of that. It's kind of a throwback, an old school game in that sense, but it's a very high quality, fun, excellent. You know, I harp on this point, but I a lot of games are there could be a game that's moral, that's morally upright, but it's not very excellent. Sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
And you can have a game that's morally upright and excellent, but maybe isn't fun. And I think this game is moral, excellent, and fun. I'm convinced it is. So I think it's ticking a lot of boxes that parents long for. And we're sharing them together. They go together, the book and the game with this Kickstarter. And I'm so excited about it. And I it's a little bit, intimidating. I know you probably feel the same way because you're doing a Kickstarter at the same time as well. So it's a great way to fail publicly. So
it really is. Fall flat on your face in front of a lot of people.
It's kind of like our characters. You know, we do this to our characters all the time. We put them out in these horrible situations, and now we're doing it to ourselves, and it might not work. But I'm excited. I have a certain amount of peace just knowing that, like, I feel like the main thing is being a faithful steward of what I've got with before the kids and families. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like giving it to God. And if it is an ambitious Kickstarter for us, for sure, highly ambitious and a little bit terrifying, but the truth is we're making a good gift. There are certain market concerns with it that we have to sort of succeed in a big way for it to work, because it's challenging to, it's, I'll just say it's expensive to create a video game. It's on a different scale. So we're going for it. And I feel very happy about the gift that we're creating for kids. And I feel I am happy and delighted to invite families into this adventure. I think it's a good gift. I think it's not just a good gift for their family. I think it's a good gift for the world. And so if we go down, I'm going to go down fighting.
I love it. And I'm excited to hear and see it come to life. I'm excited for this because one of the things that I've seen with you, if read in your books, and I know your fans would all agree, is that books as well can be morally upright, but not well written, not executed well. They can be morally upright, executed well, but not entertaining.
Yeah.
But you hit all three with your books. They are upright. They touch on godly principles. They're well written, but then they're also entertaining and so much fun. And I have no doubt your video game will also be this kind of adventure because this is what you produce. This is what you and your team, you do this. And so for my listeners here, I really encourage you guys go check out Sam's Kickstarter. We're going to link to it in the show notes and grab the video game, get the book, dive into this adventure with your family. This sounds like something that families can do together. And I'm excited to be a part of it myself, but I really do encourage everyone listening to get involved because this is an exciting opportunity because we need more of this. We need this to succeed because we need these kinds of video games. We need these kinds of stories in the world. And when one succeeds, it makes way for more like it to succeed as well. Yeah. And it paves a new path that lets people know this is wanted. This is an opportunity to bless people in a way that they need. And, you know, it's easy to say, oh, no video games or call them evil because there are evil video games. Mm-hmm. But kids enjoy them. They're fun. It's fun to play a video game. And so we need to provide them with something else because the world is going to throw everything at these kids to drag them away and infuse their minds with all kinds of dark things. And this is a video game that does the opposite and points them to truth and life and calls boys to be godly men and shows girls what that should look like, what they should look for one day in their future husband and father of their children. And that's so important. And I'm always happy to partner with you in any way, Sam, to talk about what you're doing, to watch what you guys do, because it is inspiring and it's exciting to see what you're willing to fight for to provide excellent resources to these readers who I know you love.
Thank you, CJ. I appreciate that so much. And I hope people will listen to this and be backing your Kickstarter at the same time.
Thank you.
Hopefully this will come out when we're both live and out in public and scared and praying a lot.
Absolutely. Hopefully not on our faces, but if they are, come watch, you know, it'll be interesting.
Thank you so much. This is awesome to be with you. I always love these conversations. Let's do it again. Let's schedule
Absolutely.
The next one.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for being here, Sam.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed listening in on this conversation with SD Smith. Every time I talk with Sam, I thoroughly enjoy the conversation, and this time was no exception. I loved getting to hear his heart for this story and video game about Helmer, and I personally am so excited about the Kickstarter. If you haven't already checked out his Kickstarter, I encourage you to take a look and consider backing. This kind of project is so important to have many people a part of, and make sure it hits its funding goal because we need more entertainment for our kids like this.
stories that will capture their hearts, their imaginations, and bring them deeper into the purpose God has for their lives. So I encourage you to check out his Kickstarter and be a part of what they are doing here with this campaign. I also wanted to mention that my Kickstarter for Captive of Talionis is currently running. I am so excited to bring you the final installment in Bria's story with these high stakes, twists and turns, a fierce battle against an evil city, and yes, that slow burn romance that for some of my readers is a little slower than they wanted. But I promise Bria and Matthias are back in this fourth and final book, and I know you are going to love the adventure. The Kickstarter is special because it includes autographed copies, special editions with gold foil stamping, complete series collections where you can get all four books together. They can be hardback or paperback or special edition. And we even have some character-inspired collectibles like Bria's necklace and a temporary tattoo of Kai's tattoo. I am so excited about all the different things we are doing in this campaign, and we've already hit several fantastic stretch goals that every backer of the Kickstarter will receive. So if you haven't yet checked it out, please be sure to head over to Kickstarter. We have some great things in store for you there, and I am so excited to be able to offer them to you. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can discover exciting, clean, young adult, and middle grade books too.